The Bible has a lot to say about the beast, and people get all confused about what it means, who and what is a beast, and especially, is there any out there who might qualify to be the beast? Of course, the focus has to be on Germany, as I will explain. And Germany is jumping from one catastrophe to the next. There are, of course, elections coming up, as Michael Link pointed out, end of February. It doesn't appear like that anything will be solved. Nobody has even the chance of getting the majority of the votes. A coalition has to be formed. And the candidates who are there to form the coalition are, in my opinion, as unqualified as the ones who are right now running the German government. So it's going to be another debacle. But when it comes to the beast, we find that, as I will define it, the beast will come up one more time before it goes into perdition, as we read. And this is talking about a very unique personality, referring to the last leader and a military dictator of a revived ancient Roman Empire. And we have to understand that the word beast can refer to the empire and its revivals, and it can refer to the end-time leader of that revival. And sometimes it's not all that clear as to who and what is referred to. In the book of Revelation, in the 13th chapter, we read about a beast. And to very briefly summarize, it had 7 heads, it had 10 horns, and it had features of a lion, a bear, a leopard, and then a not identified beast. But going back to the book of Daniel, you find that there are beasts mentioned, and the third beast had 4 heads, and then the fourth beast, not identified in the book of Daniel, has 10 horns. And those beasts which are identified in the book of Daniel are a lion, a bear, and a leopard. So it's obvious that the book of Revelation chapter 13 is talking about a summary, let's say, of all these different elements. And every commentator is telling you that the fourth beast in the book of Daniel, with those 10 horns, is in fact the Roman Empire. Because we had the Babylonian Empire, the Persian Empire, Medo-Persian Empire, the Greco-Macedonian Empire, 4 heads because after Alexander died, 4 generals took over, and then you had the fourth beast, the Roman Empire. But what Revelation 13 is telling you is that this beast, kind of putting all of these elements together, is that Roman Empire at the time of John when he saw it in the vision, but it had 10 horns. It would be revived 10 times. And we are now looking at the final and last revival. And then there's another beast mentioned in Revelation 13 and also in Revelation 17. That's a different kind of a beast, and we'll talk about that as we go along. Now, I like to show you some similarities between the beast, that leader, and the power, that empire, which is going to be established one more time. Let's go with me, please, to the book of Isaiah, chapter 30 and verse 33. Isaiah 30 and verse 33. And you see about the fate of that final leader, and I give it already away. You're talking about the final leader who is defined as somebody coming from ancient Assyria. Today, of course, referring to Germany or Austria. So we are talking about a German or Austrian leader. And look what is going to happen to him at the very end when Christ comes back. Isaiah chapter 30 and verse 33. It says, "For Tophet was established of old. Yes, for the king it is prepared. He has made it deep and large. Its pyre is fire with much wood. the breath of the Lord, like a stream of brimstone, kindles it. Clearly talking about the lake of fire and brimstone, where the beast will be thrown into when Christ returns. A forerunner, of course, of the ultimate lake of fire, which will burn during the time of the great, or I should say, the third resurrection. But now notice that the power is also going to be destroyed by fire. So that would be the first parallel in Revelation chapter 18, talking about the end time Babylonian system run by that king of Assyria. In Revelation 18 and in verse 8, referred to here as Babylon. Notice what's happening to that system, that final revival of the Roman Empire. Therefore, her plagues will come in one day, death and mourning and famine, and she will be utterly burned with fire, for strong is the Lord God who judges her. So that's the first similarity, if you please, between the power and the end-time leader. We find that this Babylon, including the city of Rome, will be destroyed very quickly. In Revelation chapter 17, and notice in verse 9, it says, "Here is a mind which has wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains, or better, hills, on which the woman sits." We'll talk about that woman later. So in other words, we are clearly talking about a city which is built on seven hills. Verse 18, it says, "The woman whom you saw is a great city." If anybody has a doubt about it, very clearly, it's a city built on seven hills, which reigns over the kings of the earth. We'll see how it reigns. So what city is built on seven hills? We all should know that. Of course, it's Rome. And so here we have Rome again playing an important role in the future. But notice in Revelation 18 and verse 8, we just read that, it says, in one day, Babylon will be destroyed. In one day. But if you go to Revelation 18 and verse 17, it says, for in one hour, such great riches have come to nothing. So the day is identified with an hour, which means a very short time. I'm not talking about necessarily 24-hour day, but it's very short. And the same applies to the king of Assyria. Again, showing the similarity between the power and the leader, Isaiah chapter 10 and verse 17. So the light of Israel will be for a fire, and his Holy One for a flame. It will burn and devour his thorns and his briars in one day. Talking about the king of Assyria and talking about the country of Assyria as being part of the Babylonian system. We have already mentioned that the beast in Revelation 13 has 10 horns. We find a parallel passage in Daniel chapter 7 and verse 24. Daniel 7 and verse 24. The 10 horns, talking about now the 10 horns on that fourth beast, the Roman Empire, the 10 horns are 10 kings who shall arise from this kingdom, and another shall arise after them. He shall be different from the first ones, and he shall subdue three kings. This is the famous little horn about which we'll talk about in a moment, but here the point is this passage describes about the 10 kings which come out of this fourth beast, one after the other. Now that's important here. In Daniel 7, it talks about horns coming out, kings coming out, one after the other. So in other words, 10 revivals. As Revelation 13 also talks about the 10 revivals. But then there is another beast. And there we find also that it has 10 horns. But here it's different. In Revelation 17 and in verse 12, and that's where people get all confused. And they try to figure out what this beast is with the 10 horns. In Revelation 17 and verse 12, now here's a beast on which a woman sits. And that beast also has 10 horns, 7 heads and 10 horns. The 10 horns which you saw are 10 kings who have received no kingdom as yet. So they're not one after the other, but they receive authority altogether for 1 hour as kings with the beast. So here in Revelation 17, we're not talking about 10 successive situations. No, these 10 kings will all exist at the same time with the beast. And they give their power to the beast. It's also described in the book of Daniel chapter 2, of course, when you have the statue and you have the 10 toes. They all are together, 10 at the same time. And of course, a rock comes down from heaven, symbolizing Jesus Christ, destroying that statue by smashing on those 10 toes as 10 kings, the same thing that's being described here. They're all together. So it's important to realize now, in Daniel 7, we're talking about 10 successive situations. In Daniel 2 and in Revelation 17, we're talking about the 10 kings existing together at the same time in the future. Now, they may be existing already today, but we're talking about Europe. We're talking about the huge masses of European member states, 27 at the time, right now. But they will give their power to the beast. 10 kings, 10 nations or groups of nations, so-called core Europe. They haven't shown themselves yet as to who they are. They will give their power to the beast. Again, we don't know yet. Let's put it this way. The beast hasn't manifested himself to the world yet as to who he is. I believe he is in existence today. I believe those 10 nations are in existence today. When it happens, it will happen very quickly. It says 1 hour. Very short time. There's also another interesting distinction. We have just read in the book of Daniel, when it comes to the fourth animal, the fourth beast, 10 horns come out of it. When it comes to Revelation, it says that 10 horns give their power to the beast. So in other words, clear-cut distinction between the two. We also read that Satan will actually persecute the church, the church members. And we get an interesting reference as to how long that is going to take place. But notice Revelation chapter 13 and verse 5. Here it's a reference to the power again that revived Roman Empire. Revelation 13 and verse 5. Revelation 13 talked about this revived Roman Empire, beginning in verse 1, with the 7 heads, 10 horns. Verse 5. And he was given a mouth, speaking great things and blasphemies, and he was given authority to continue for 42 months. 42 months. Now, that would be 1,260 days, if you go by a month having 30 days. Now, I'll talk about that in a moment. That's normally how it's being understood. 1 day equals 1 year in biblical prophecy. So we're talking about the fact that the church would be kind of protected by God for 1,260 years. And that is exactly what happened throughout the history of the church and throughout the history of the revivals of the Roman Empire. Also in Revelation 12 and verse 6, another reference to the power trying to destroy, persecute the church. Revelation 12 and verse 6, then the woman, the church, fled into the wilderness where she has a place prepared by God that they should feed her there 1,260 days or years. In prophecies, this is not talking here about the end time place of safety. That's talking about the time where God has protected the church for all these years. But I will show you, of course, some parallels. Because we also find that Satan, through the beast, the end time leader, will also persecute the church. And this time, for literally 3.5 years in Revelation 12 and verse 14. So we just read about 12:6, which talks about the church. Now you're looking at Revelation 12 and verse 14, an end time event, where it says, "But the woman was given 2 wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness to her place, where she is nourished for a time and times and half a time from the presence of the serpent." Now here we're talking about the church being protected at the place of safety, a literal place here on earth, for 3.5 years. You see the parallelism. On the one hand, talking about the power. On the other hand, talking about the beast. And notice how long this persecution mainly will last when it comes to the church, who the church members who then are going to be at the place of safety. Revelation chapter 3 and verse 10. This is what Christ says to the Philadelphia era. "Because you have kept my command to persevere, I also will keep you from the hour of trial, which will come upon the whole world to test those who dwell on the earth." Here we're talking about the hour of trial, taking it together with Revelation 12:14, what we just read. Here the hour would be defined as 3.5 years, approximately. So again, we have this end-time event being caused by the beast under the influence of Satan, but we also had the historical events, again caused by Satan, influencing the Roman Empire to persecute, trying to get rid of the church. And it wasn't just the Roman Empire when it comes to the political, but also another power was involved as well. We find in Daniel chapter 7, verse 25, some more statements regarding the persecution of church members of the church. Throughout history, and also in the end time. Daniel 7 and verse 25. We have just read in verse 24 that 10 kings will come out of this fourth animal. And then we read about another one arising after them, talking about this later. But this other one, this little horn, it says in verse 25, "And he shall speak pompous words against the Most High, shall persecute the saints of the Most High, and shall intend to change times and law. And then the saints shall be given into his hand for a time and times and half a time," 3.5 years. But you see the switch here. You see the switch from what the little horn would be doing throughout history, after he has come to power, up until the end time, where apparently the little horn, through the final representative of this religious power, will help persecuting the saints together with the beast for 3.5 years. In Daniel chapter 12 and verse 7, we also read Daniel 12 and verse 7, clearly a prophecy for the end time. "Then I heard the man clothed in linen, who was above the waters of the river, when he held up his right hand and his left hand to heaven, and swore by him who lives forever, that it shall be for a time and times and half a time, and when the power of the holy people has been completely shattered, all these things shall be finished." Clearly talking about events at the very last times. Now, obviously that persecution is going to happen through that final power, religious power, military power, and the leaders of these powers, the beast and the false prophet. Now, in all of these figures, we are taking it that a year consists of 360 days, and a month consists of 30 days. Now, I have been asked this question many times. If it's that clear, 3.5 years, we would know, would we not? Once those 3.5 years start, we would know exactly when Christ would come back. All we need to do is to just count the 1,260 days. And we got it. But Christ says, no, you don't get it, because you will not know. Now let's look a little bit into the Hebrew calendar, how this really works. Because in the Hebrew calendar, the Jewish months can have 29 or it can have 30 days. And the Hebrew calendar can have 12 months, but it can also have more than 12 months. We're talking about so-called leap years. So if a leap year is included, then we are talking about 13 months. And so a year in the Hebrew calendar can have 353, 354, 355, 383, 384, or 385 days. And then we have the leap year, meaning you add another month. And so then you have suddenly 384 days. And of course, months which a equal number have 29 days, and an unequal number they have 30 days. So you can clearly see that the years can be prolonged, can be shortened, depending on what time we are talking about. So it is not at all clear that you can say, oh, well, you know, once this event takes place, once the beast comes to power, all I need to do is to start counting 3.5 years, and then we got the return of Jesus Christ. Obviously not. Christ would have known that. He said, well, it's not even to me to know. It's only the Father who will make that decision, plus which we find scriptures in the Bible indicating that the 3.5 years may be shortened on top of it. But then we find another parallel, and this can be found in Revelation chapter 13, the parallel between the leader of the last revival and the Roman Empire. Now people get that one all wrong, because they think what I'm going to talk to you about now is just strictly talking about the final leader. That's wrong. Revelation 13, let's start reading in verse 16. Now here we're talking about a second beast which comes out, which is a religious power. That one has two horns, pretending to speak like a lamb, and of course is influenced by Satan the devil. And we read in verse 15, or rather 16, he causes all, old and small, great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand and on their foreheads, and that no one may buy or sell except one who has the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. So the second beast causes this mark of the beast to be taken by the people, and if they don't have it, they cannot buy or sell. The very famous mark of the beast. Now this one refers to both. It refers to the end-time leader, and it refers to the empire throughout history. It also refers to the founder of the Roman Empire. We have just read in Revelation 13, verse 17, that no one may buy or sell except the one who has the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. And notice what it says in verse 18. Here is wisdom. Let him who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666. So we are told to calculate the number, or better, to add up. In other words, you have the same word in the book of Luke where Christ says, count the costs, add them up, whether you have enough or whether you are failing. Now, it's the number of a man we read. The founder of the Roman Empire was King Latinus. There, by the way, the word Latin comes from in German, Latin. So he was the founder of the Roman Empire. It wasn't Romulus and Remus, according to the legend. You know, the people who were kind of nourished by a wolf, that's legend. No, it was Latinus. And in the Greek, every letter has a numerical value. And the numerical value for Latinos is, you guessed it, 666. So therefore, the beast is identified here as the Roman Empire. And the number 666 identifies the founder of the Roman Empire, which was Latinos. But I'll give you the figures right now. In the Greek, L stands for 30, A for 1, T for 300, E for 5, 1 for 10, or L rather for 10, N for 50, O for 70, and S for 200. If you calculate it all together, you get 666. So, the point being, this is referring to, first of all, to the power of the Roman Empire. But as I said before, the designation of the beast can also refer to the end-time representative or the ruler of the final revival of that empire. And therefore, it is likely, but I'm emphasizing now the word likely, it's not a given, it's not a doctrine. It is likely, it is possible, probable, that the numerical value of the name of that final human leader of the revived Roman Empire will also be 666. The name could refer to a literal name, like Mr. So-and-so. It can refer to an adopted name. It can refer to perhaps a well-known expression associated with the name describing the beast, such as Heil Hitler, such as Il Duce, referring to Mussolini. In addition, when people accept his name, they accept what they stand for and what they do. So in other words, we may not know even yet, even if we think we know the person, we may not know what kind of a name that person is adopting. Now, I'm getting these memos all the time. I'm getting questions all the time. People are telling me, oh, I have identified the beast. I have calculated the number. I have come to 666. So that person got to be the beast. Now, first of all, what we have to understand is it has to be an Assyrian, which means it has to be somebody from Germany or Austria. So every other person, you might as well forget, couldn't be the beast. Secondly, even if you get to the point where you are calculating the number and you come to 666, that all by itself doesn't identify the beast either. Because 666 was rightly, quote-unquote, calculated, referring to Martin Luther in the past, referring to Mussolini, but Mussolini was not the final leader of the Roman Empire. Sometimes it was referring to the beast, to the Pope. Sometimes they tried to refer it to Nero. It didn't quite fit, so they had a change from 666 to 616. So the point is, even if it were to apply to somebody who is known today with a name after you kind of, and I looked at all these schedules they had and these calculations, they always had to kind of change it around a little to make it fit. So, but all by itself, that still doesn't mean anything. So I'm getting these memos, oh, it's definitely Sebastian Kurz in Austria. Or it's Olaf Scholz, or it's Gutenberg, or it's Friedrich Merz, or it's Jens Spahn, or it's going to be the new leader of the AfD party who is going to come up within a year, and on it goes. Some have even said, oh, it's going to be Trump. Recently somebody wrote me, it's going to be Trump, and his son, Barron, is going to be the false prophet. And I mean, you get all this kind of stuff people are talking about. But let me just say, it is not Trump. Because even though he has German ancestry, interestingly enough, but you see, if it were him, how can he rule in Germany? The only way would be he would come and conquer Germany, would come and conquer Europe, and then would be the leader of Europe. But that wouldn't quite work, because, you know, he is then going to attack America, because that's what the Bible says, that's a prophecy. So it's not Trump, and still I want to say something, because you might have heard this, and it's something which just was announced today or yesterday, and I'd like to go to an interesting development. Have you ever heard of Paula White? No? Have no follower? So U.S. President Donald Trump announced Thursday at the National Prayer Breakfast that he would create a White House faith office led by Pastor Paula White, who is amazing, he said. And so she is now going to lead the National Prayer White House faith office. Now, I got these articles from our members in Germany, including a video of her doing a prayer broadcast. It is absolutely shocking, to say the least. Absolutely shocking. To me, some clear influence is involved here. And many Christians, quote-unquote Christians, are responding on the social media and saying they are appalled by that decision by Trump and asking him to revoke this. The problem is, most of them point out problems with this lady. The crux of the matter is much more deep. And our update next week will talk about this some more, because it shows one thing. This world is ruled by Satan, the devil, without exception. Now, of course, Satan can only do what God allows. And God allows some things in order to carry out his plan. But God is not ruling this world. God is not ruling any of those countries. God is not ruling the United States of America. And we shouldn't be surprised when we find spiritual influences of a wicked nature having a lot to do with our leadership. You know, the fact that the White House is haunted, as we pointed out recently in some programs, should also make us pause and think what's going on in this world, what's going on in the United States of America. The fact that, going back to Revelation 13, this is talking about both the power and the leader can also be proven by going to Revelation 13, verses 7 and 8. Revelation 13, verses 7 and 8. Now, again, in verse 7, it's still talking about the power of the Roman Empire. It says, it was granted to him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And authority was given him over every tribe, tongue, and nation. But now verse 8. All who dwell on the earth will worship him, whose names have not been written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. Notice it says correctly, all who dwell on the earth will worship him. Now if it was the beast, the power, it should say all will worship it. But here in the Greek, it clearly says him, and the Elberfelder Bible, for instance, has the annotation, with the beast here, a male person is meant. So this then is talking clearly about the end time beast, who is going to be worshipped. It's not just the false prophet who is going to be worshipped, the beast will also be worshipped. Now, Hitler was kind of worshipped in a sense, but this one will really be worshipped. So both of them will be. But then also notice another interesting passage. In Revelation 13 and verse 3, we find that the empire, the Roman Empire, would get a deadly wound, and that deadly wound was healed. Now, we've always talked about the fall of Rome and then how it would be revived several times. But this deadly wound is not only referring to the power, because in Revelation 13 and in verse 14 it says, and here it's talking about the religious power and the false prophet, and he deceives those who dwell on the earth by those signs which he was granted to do in the sight of the beast, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast who was wounded by the sword and lived. Again, here the word in the Greek is, again, a male expression, who, not it. I mean, if it's just talking about the power, the beast as a power, it should say, make an image to the beast which was founded or wounded by the sword. No, it's talking about who. Again, indicating that that human leader will also receive some kind of a wound, and people may think he's gone, but he will come back, and he will then live and create havoc over the earth. So this wound, we don't know exactly what it is. It could be a political defeat, like Hitler was defeated, as you all know, when he had the putsch over there in the Hofburg, and then, of course, or beer keller, I should say, and, of course, then he was in prison even, and they said, oh, he's gone, and he came back. The same actually happened to Mussolini, so it could be something like that. He's coming out of the historical abyss, so to speak, from the past, and many will marvel. They will follow him. Again, the annotation by the Elberfelder Bible is saying that here the reference is to, in the Greek it says, a male person, der in German, not who in the sense of it. So it was clearly referring to a person. See, as the Roman Empire had received a deadly wound and was healed, so it appears that that final leader will also receive some kind of a deadly wound, and it will be healed from that deadly wound and will then act and become extremely powerful. And we also read that the power, the Roman Empire, will for a while fall into the abyss, the bottomless pit, but will come out of that bottomless pit in the end time. We find that in Revelation chapter 9, verses 1 and 2. Revelation 9 and verse 1. Then the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fallen from heaven to the earth. To him was given the key to the bottomless pit, the abyss. And he opened the bottomless pit, and smoke arose out of the pit like the smoke of a great furnace. And so the sun and the air were darkened because of the smoke of the pit. And then it describes the beast power, the last revival. Verse 11, and they had a king over them, and it was the angel of the bottomless pit. And who is the angel of that bottomless pit? Who is behind all of this? Well, his name in Hebrew is Abaddon. In Greek, it has the name Apollyon. Both means destroyer, destruction. No other than Satan, the devil, will now become directly involved, getting that beast out of the bottomless pit, that final revival of the Roman Empire. If you even read that, he will give his power to the beast. Also in chapter 17 and verse 8. Now this is talking about the power. But notice in chapter 17 and verse 8 it says, again talking about the power, clearly cannot be talking about the individual. The beast that you saw was, is not, and will ascend out of the bottomless pit and go to perdition. So here's talking about, if you please, the last three revivals of the Roman Empire, because there was a time under Hitler and Mussolini, it wasn't really great, it was there, but it wasn't there. But it's going to be coming out of the bottomless pit of the past one more time. And then it will go into the perdition. That will be the last time. So here again is talking about the power, but notice in Revelation chapter 11 and verse 7, they're talking about the individual. And it says, Revelation 11 and verse 7, talking about the two witnesses, when they finish the testimony, the beast that ascends out of the bottomless pit will make war against them, overcome them, and kill them. Now, it still can refer to the power, but here the emphasis seems to be the individual, that military leader who is then going to kill the two witnesses. So again, the parallel here between the power and the individual, and both these passages refer to the both of them. And as I said, sometimes it may not be all that clear who is referred to, just the one or the other, or maybe both at the same time. And when we are talking about the beast now, the individual, notice a few characteristics which can help us perhaps to identify who and who not the beast, that final individual, that final leader would be. Isaiah chapter 10, verses 12 to 13. And if you have in your mind certain candidates, ask yourself, would that apply? Or wouldn't it apply? Isaiah 10 and verse 12. Now here's talking about that final beast, the king of Assyria. It says here in Isaiah 10 and verse 12, look how he is being described. Therefore it shall come to pass, when the Lord has performed all his work on Mount Zion and on Jerusalem, that he will say, I will punish the fruit of the arrogant heart of the king of Assyria, and the glory of his haughty looks. For he says, by the strength of my hand I have done it, and by my wisdom, for I am prudent, I have removed the boundaries of the people, and have robbed their treasuries, so I have put down the inhabitants like a valiant man, or like a mighty man. Remember that. He has removed the boundaries of the people. So he is arrogant. He thinks he is such a great person. He is doing it all by himself. In the book of Daniel, chapter 8, we find another description of this end-time leader. Daniel 8, verses 23 and 24. And in the latter time of their kingdom, when the transgressors have reached their fullness, a king shall arise, having fierce features, who understands sinister schemes. His power shall be mighty, but not by his own power. No, of course, Satan is behind him. He shall destroy fearfully and shall prosper and thrive. He shall destroy the mighty and also the holy people. Through his cunning he shall cause deceit to prosper under his rule, and he shall exalt himself in his heart. He shall destroy many in their prosperity. He shall even rise against the prince of princes, but he shall be broken without human means, because Christ will come to kill him. Fierce features, sinister schemes. Now some people refer to certain ones, and they look at you look at their faces. There is absolutely no way that they could be described as fierce features. So that rules it out right there. In Daniel chapter 11, verse 32. Daniel 11 and verse 32. Those who do wickedly against the covenant, he shall corrupt with flattery. But the people who know their God shall be strong and carry out great exploits. We'll still be doing a great work in the end time, just prior to Christ's return. But he will use flattery. And this flattery, this deceit, will also induce many to fall away from the truth. We find that in Matthew chapter 24 and verse 10. See, all of that is a package. We should never think that the beast has nothing to do with people falling away from the truth. It's only those who know the truth, those who have been called, predestined to be called, who even are able to recognize who the beast is. But then if they give up in the process, they will lose that precious knowledge. People today have lost all knowledge about the holy days, for example, even though they knew them at one time. In Matthew 24 and verse 10, we read, and then many will be offended, they will betray one another, and they will hate one another. Where it says they will be offended, the German translations have here, they will fall away. Many then would fall away, according to this passage. And the beast will have something to do with that. He will try to deceive them with flattery, probably giving them all kinds of promises. And here's another interesting characteristic in Isaiah chapter 19 and in verse 4. Isaiah 19 at verse 4. And the Egyptians I will give into the hand of a cruel master, and a fierce king will rule over them, says the Lord of hosts. Again, we have this fierce king, but other translations have here a cruel master. Of course, this has it too. A cruel, so he's going to be cruel. You know, like Hitler was cruel. Like some of the Roman emperors were cruel. Now you look at some of the candidates, some people think, you can say whatever you want to say about them, they're not cruel. You can say that, not by any stretch of an imagination. But I'd like to point out something now. There is a merger. There is a fusion, if you please, between the power, the Roman Empire, and the little horn, and also between the beast and the false prophet. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, let's turn to the book of Daniel, chapter 7, verses 7 and 8. Daniel 7, verses 7 and 8. And this I saw in the night, visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, exceedingly strong. It had huge iron teeth. It was devouring, breaking in pieces, trampling the residue with its feet. It was different from all the beasts that were before, and it had 10 horns. Now, this is, of course, talking about the Roman Empire. It was different in several ways. For instance, he had 10 horns, would revive 10 times. But also it was different because there was another association with somebody else, as we will see. Verse 8, I was considering the horns, and there was another horn, a little one, coming up among them, before whom three of the first horns were plucked out by the roots. And there in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking pompous words. Now let's keep reading in verse 19. Then I wished to know the truth about the fourth beast, which was different from all the others, exceedingly dreadful, with its teeth of iron, its nails of bronze, which devoured, broke in pieces, and trampled the residue with its feet, and the 10 horns that were on its head, and the other horn which came up, before which three fell, namely that horn which had eyes and a mouth which spoke pompous words, whose appearance was greater than his fellow. So originally was small, little, would become greater and greater. Also verse 23, and he said, the fourth beast shall be a fourth kingdom on earth, a Roman Empire, would be the only one, because it would be revived 10 times, which shall be different from all other kingdoms, and shall devour the whole earth. It has been doing that all along, and it started, and of course it's going to devour it again in its final revival. Trample it and break it in pieces. The 10 horns, verse 24, are 10 kings who shall arise from the kingdom, and another shall rise after them. Now the word after them can also refer to after its kind, similar to them, in a sense of patterning or being patterned after those 10 kings. He shall be different from the first ones and shall subdue three kings. Of course, jumping ahead in history, we know that the Catholic Church was responsible for wiping out the first three revivals of the Roman Empire because they were of Arian faith. And then, of course, they were in charge, so to speak. And when you go to the scripture in the book of Revelation 17, you find the woman riding the beast with 7 heads and 10 horns. The 10 horns are the 10 kings which will exist at the time of Christ's return. The 7 heads are those 7 last revivals of the Roman Empire, which were under the Catholic Church, that woman, that fallen woman. And so the little horn, none other than that fallen woman, is responsible for subduing or wiping out 3 kings. Notice verse 25. He shall speak pompous words against the Most High, shall persecute the saints of the Most High, we read this before, shall intend to change times and law. All of that having to do with that second power, that second beast, that religious power, having done all of this, it has changed, you know, the law regarding holy times. But now notice, then the saints shall be given into his hands for a time and times and half a time. Now it jumps towards the end time. Now it jumps towards a time when this little horn is using the false prophet, so to speak, to bring about that persecution. So a merger is being described. A fusion is being described between the beast power and the false prophet and the little horn. See, in other words, the little horn, the church, but then also the last representative of that church. Let's go to Revelation chapter 13 and verse 14. Because the second beast will see to it that the image is being created. Revelation 13 and verse 14. It says, he received those and deceived those who dwell on the earth by these signs which is granted to do in the sight of the beast, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image of the beast who was wounded. Verse 15, and he was granted power to give breath to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. Also in chapter 14 and verse 9, we read, then a third angel followed, saying with a loud voice, if anyone worships the beast and his image and receives its mark on his forehead, on his hand, he himself shall also drink of the wine of the wrath of God, which is poured out for strength into the cup of his indignation, and he shall be tormented with fire and brimstone in the presence of the holy angels and the presence of the Lamb. Also in chapter 19 and verse 20. Revelation chapter 19 and verse 20. Then the beast was captured, and with him the false prophet, who worked signs in his presence, by which he deceived those who received the mark of the beast and those who worshipped his image. And those two were cast alive into the lake of fire, burning with brimstone. And also in chapter, well, let's leave it with that. So we are talking about an image. We're talking about the fact that people will worship the beast and the image. Now, what is important to understand that here again we are talking about the power, and we are talking about those leading the power. The image also can have dual meaning. You see, there was an image which existed ever since the Catholic Church became big, because they created a power patterned after the military power of the Roman Empire. And when you look at the way the Catholic Church is structured, then you can clearly see as to what they have been doing. And if they did that, they were also responsible for the martyrdom and the death of many true Christians. Those who did not want to live by the dictates of the Catholic Church, what did they do? They saw to it that the military power, the political power, would go after them and kill them. It happened then. It's going to happen now. And so the mark of the beast, to make this point very clear, has existed for a long time. It's not only coming into existence when the final military leader will come up. It has existed for a long time, but it will be enforced again. And so the image of the beast can also, when it comes to the final revival of the Roman Empire, it can actually also refer to a real image, which is going to speak and which is going to create the illusion that it can speak and that it will influence people to worship it. You can think of all those statues of, weeping Mary and all that stuff. So, but the main thing is it also refers to the Catholic Church being patterned after the Roman Empire. And having said all of this, let's quickly now go to the book of Nahum, chapter 1, verses 10 and 11, because there we read more about the beast, the power, the false prophet, the whore, all of that. Nahum 1, verse 10 and 11. For while tangled like thorns, and while drunken like drunkards, they shall be devoured like stubble fully dried. From you comes forth one who plots evil against the Lord, a wicked counselor. Talking about the end time beast. The translation, wicked counselor, actually should be a counselor of Belial. And of course that shows that satanic influence, the satanic possession, Belial, that idol god people were worshiping. You know, we know from the book of Revelation that the beast will be demonically possessed, not just influenced, possessed. And here is this end-time prophecy refers to the beast or the modern king of Assyria. We read about them already and him in Isaiah 10. He's also called King Jareb in the book of Hosea chapter 5, verse 13. You can look at this later. Jareb means fighter, somebody who wants to fight, who wants to conquer. So here's this wicked counselor, this counselor of Belial, is influenced, is possessed by Satan, the devil himself. Or if it's not Satan, it's most certainly one very strong demon. And he is called the fighter, willing to fight. Notice verse 14 in Nahum 1. Nahum 1 and verse 14. The Lord has given a command concerning you. Your name shall be perpetuated no longer. Out of the house of your gods, I will cut off the carved image and the molded image. I will dig your grave, for you are vile. Again, talking about the beast, talking about the end-time king of Assyria, it conveys the thought he will have no posterity. Now, listen carefully what I'm saying. This could perhaps indicate that the beast is homosexual. Perhaps indicate. This is not doctrine. You know, people, when they're looking at somebody, the first thing they look at is, oh, is he homosexual? Is he gay? Even if he is gay, that person, doesn't mean he is the beast. And even if the beast turning out to be the beast is not gay, doesn't mean he is not the beast. So there are many things you got to look at. But it is an interesting thought. In Daniel chapter 11 and verse 37, let's turn to this real quick. Daniel 11 verse 37, this thought might be confirmed as a possibility. Daniel 11 and verse 13, I'm sorry, Daniel 11 verse 37. Daniel 11 and verse 37. He shall regard neither the God of his fathers nor the desire of women, nor regard any god, for he shall exalt himself above them all. Again, talking about the end-time beast. He doesn't regard the desire of women, the way it's translated here. The old Luther Bible of 1964, well, I can even go back later, earlier, but they translate that he doesn't care for the love of women or the love toward women. Frauenliebe in German. Now, again, this could be a reference to other than normal sexual preferences. Commentary of Henry says of and speaks of unnatural lust in this context, and this might then indicate that the beast will be homosexual because we are talking about unnatural lusts in Romans chapter 1, verses 24 to 28. If the reference is to the homosexual nature of the end-time beast, we could think as a forerunner of some people like Emperor Hadrian, who was massacred by who massacred the Jews. He was married, but he was also homosexual. We can think of Jörg Haider, a former leader of Austria, who was married, had a daughter, and it turned out to be homosexual. The beast could very well be married, still be homosexual. Or he might be living in self-imposed celibacy. Or he might not, in any event, being described here as one who is that way. Nevertheless, the thought is interesting. The German Schlachter Bible says that he doesn't have the desire of women. It could mean that the beast is homosexual, but it surely means that he has no normal interest in women, as, for example, someone who lives in celibacy. There's one interesting candidate who sometimes lives in celibacy, but now he is together with a girlfriend and they are having a child. So again, all of this is interesting, and all it tells you is that we don't know yet. The beast hasn't manifested himself yet. So just let's not jump ahead and think, oh, I know, I'm the one who knows, and the ministry and the church of God, they don't know, but God has shown it to me, and I know. Let's look at Nahum chapter 3 and verse 4. Nahum chapter 3 and verse 4. Because of the multitude of harlotries, of the seductive harlot, the mistress of sorceries, who sell nations through her harlotries, and families through her sorceries, the destruction here of Nineveh will occur. So who is that harlot? Well, I mean, you don't have much to have, you don't have to have much of a fantasy to figure out that this is actually the fallen woman in Revelation 17 and 18. That connection is clearly obvious. But let's notice a few scriptures, because here we're talking about now that second beast mentioned in Revelation 13, which is clearly here defined and described in Revelation 17. The woman is sitting on that beast, the fallen woman. Revelation 17, verse 1. Then one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls came and talked with me and said to me, "Come, and I will show you the judgment of that great harlot who sits on many waters, with whom the kings of the earth committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth were made drunk with the wine of her fornication." Here, of course, this is symbolic. Here we have a great religious power having fallen away from the truth, like a woman, a fallen woman, has fallen away from the correct lifestyle. The waters, talking about all the kings of the earth, they have committed fornication, spiritual fornication. They have accepted her wine of wrong, false doctrines, and have accepted those, and will persecute those who don't accept those false doctrines. Verse 18, we read that, "The woman whom you saw is that great city, which reigns over the king of the earth." Again, showing that ultimately the Catholic Church is strongly influencing the kings to do what they want to have done. They have already done it. I mean, you have to keep Sunday. You have to keep Christmas. You have to keep Easter. You must not keep Saturday. You must not keep the holy days. And if you do, you are being persecuted, which is already happening in Germany right now, to a large extent. And it will be so much worse. Revelation 18 and verse 3. "For all the nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication." It is a very angry power, the wrath of her fornication. "The kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth have become rich through the abundance of her luxury." Notice verse 23. Revelation 18 and verse 23. "The light of a lamp shall not shine in you anymore, and the voice of bridegroom and bride shall not be heard in you anymore, for your merchants were the great men of the earth, for by your sorcery all the nations were deceived." It's a rich power, but it deceives the people, not just the kings, all the nations through her sorcery. In Revelation 14 and verse 8, "And another angel followed, saying, 'Babylon is fallen, that great city, because she has made all nations drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication.'" They're all drunk. They are so drunk that they do not realize and recognize any longer the truth. And if you tell them to keep these false pagan holidays, they think you're crazy. "Oh, this is all Jewish. This is Jewish stuff, you know, the Sabbath and so on. It's, you know, we don't care about this." Think in terms of, again, what we just read in Nahum 3 and verse 4. Let me read it again. "Because of the multitude of harlotries, of the seductive harlot, the mistress of sorceries, who sells nations through her harlotries and families through her sorceries." A clear-cut description which we find in Revelation chapter 17 and 18. That seductive, deceitful harlot and sorceress rides on the beast, that second beast, the final political and military revival of the ancient Roman Empire under German leadership. Germany will be the leading nation of the Babylonian revival. The harlot, the false religious power, influences and rides on the political capital of modern Assyria. Might very well be Berlin, could be maybe some other place. This is not even talking about Rome here when it comes to the book of Nahum. Now, let me quickly go to Isaiah chapter 47 and show you some more about the sorceries of that harlot, that false religious power. And remember now, that power has daughter churches. It's not like the mother church alone, but it has daughter churches. All these Protestant churches have submitted, to the Catholic Church's teachings. Then they say, oh, we are going to go by the Bible. And of course, the Bible doesn't say anything of the kind. And of course, the Catholic Church, even I said very clearly, well, of course, they are following us, accepting our lead. They're keeping Sunday rather than the Sabbath. The Bible, nobody talks anything about keeping Sunday. They're following our lead because we have had the authority to make the change. Didn't we read about the little horn? Intends to change times and law. That's exactly what the Catholic Church has done, and that's exactly what the Protestant churches have accepted. And if you don't accept it, you are ostracized, and you are a heretic, and you are worthy of death. That is where it's going to lead, because that's where it has been in the past. Isaiah 47 and verse 9. Isaiah 47 and verse 9. But these two things shall come to you in a moment, in one day. The loss of children and widowhood. They shall come upon you in their fullness, because of the multitude of your sorceries, for the great abundance of your enchantments. And then also in verse 12, stand now with your enchantments and the multitude of your sorceries in which you have labored from your youth. Perhaps you will be able to profit. Perhaps you will prevail. Of course, he's speaking in a more sarcastic way here. We should never forget the fact that we are talking about demonic powers, and they will heavily, and I mean heavily, influence the nations. I mean, otherwise they wouldn't possibly follow the beast and the false prophet, but they are being influenced by those demonic influences, these demonic powers. Going back to what we have just read in the book of Nahum, and also now in Isaiah 47, the Cincino commentary points out, the Assyrians lured their victims as though they were under a spell. And it's quite interesting how the situation was described after World War II, after the German Empire, the Third Reich, so to speak, the Nazi conquerors had been destroyed. And people are saying it was almost like as if Germany became awake because they were under a spell. Assyrians were and will be again under the spell of Satan and his demons. That was true in ancient times. It was very obvious when Hitler was in power, and it will be true again. And modern Assyrians also will be under the spell of the harlot, that great false Babylonian church of Revelation 17. It's interesting when you look at Nahum chapter 3, it explains that God will punish modern Nineveh, that modern capital of the political power, for its involvement with the harlot. You see, they still could have known better. They refused to. They accepted the harlot's evil practices. And it will get so much worse. And you will be tested. We all will be tested. Whether we are going to withstand this influence or not. Another passage I'd like to quickly go to is Habakkuk chapter 1 and verse 5. Habakkuk 1 and verse 5. It says, look among the nations and watch. Be utterly astounded. For I will work a work in your days which you wouldn't believe though it were told you. Now, of course, we have been reading about this many times. In verse 6, it explains what that work is, which God will do. It says in verse 6, for indeed I am raising up the Chaldeans, a bitter and hasty nation which marches through the breadth of the earth to possess dwelling places that are not theirs. Now, we read about that the king of Assyria earlier, taking over dwelling places and changing the boundaries. Now, in Habakkuk's day, God used the ancient Chaldeans to punish Israel. In our time, God will use the modern Chaldeans to punish the houses of Israel and Judah. Now, in our time, the Chaldeans describe modern Babylon, a religious, political, economic, and military power. It's the final and last resurrection of the ancient Roman Empire, a collaboration now between church and state under the leadership of a charismatic leader, the beast or the king of the north, or the king Jareb of modern Assyria, and he will work together with a false prophet, a powerful religious leader. Now, all kinds of ideas are circulating. You know, the false prophet, that's somebody coming from Iran or from the Middle East. You know, people say this because they have no clue as to what the Bible is talking about. This is a Catholic church which has been ruling the last revivals, the last seven revivals of the Roman Empire all along. It's not a power from the Middle East or anything of that nonsense. But under the beast leadership and the influence of the false prophet, the modern Chaldeans will invade dwelling places which are not theirs. And of course, this occupying force is also described in many other places, and some of them we have already read. And in the analysis, the final analysis, the final resurrection of the Roman Empire occurs because of Israel's wickedness. We shouldn't forget that. God is bringing up the Chaldeans so that he can use them to destroy or attack, enslave, kill the modern descendants of the house of Israel, and of course also Judah. In Habakkuk 1 and verse 11 we read, Habakkuk 1 and verse 11, then his mind changes, talking about that king of Assyria, that last leader, and he transgresses, he commits offense, ascribing this power to his God. Now, where it says he transgresses, it literally means he passes over. Now, the reference is no longer to the Chaldean army, but now to its leader, the beast. And where it says his mind changes, it can also be translated his spirit changes. What's being described here is demonic influence or possession. That's going to happen to that beast. He may not be possessed yet, whoever he is, but he will be once he comes to power. He will be demonically possessed. I mean, Revelation 16 talks about this. You can look at this later, verses 13 and 14, where it clearly talks about demonic possession of the beast and the false prophets. And he will commit offense by erecting the abomination of desolation at the holy place. Now, that means there is to be a temple. I'm getting all these memos now, specifically recently for the last sending watch I did on Mr. Trump. And people are saying, oh, there's not going to be a temple. It's going to be the Antichrist, and he puts his ideas into the minds of church members. What an absolute nonsense. I mean, people are just absolutely so foolish in not understanding that is it the truth of the Bible. I mean, it's sometimes mind-boggling. There's going to be a temple. Obviously, the man of sin is going to be in the temple saying that he is God. And the abomination of desolation will be erected at the temple, and he is part of that abomination of desolation. And the beast seems to be considering him as his God, whom he will follow for a while. Because we just read that he is ascribing his power to his God. Now, of course, it also says in other places he is totally rejecting the God of the Bible. He is actually totally rejecting the God of his fathers. He's worshiping a God nobody has known before. Of course not, because a false prophet will arise then during his lifetime and not before. And then we also read that the first beast, remember we read that, that the first beast will have a mark, a special mark of identification that will be imposed on and accepted by all those who are deceived by Satan to worship both the political and religious leader of the European Empire. Now, let me just conclude by saying that the mark of the beast has also been quite often misunderstood. Now, of course, it is synonymous with a political and religious philosophy that is completely opposed to the true worship of God. And it does, of course, include the mandatory and statutory celebration of pagan religious holidays, such as Sunday, Christmas, Easter, and the rejection of the weekly and annual holidays of God, such as the weekly Sabbath, and among others, the Feast of Tabernacles. But it includes more. It includes other aspects which are kind of connected to the worship of the true God. It includes numerous human and ungodly concepts, such as fighting in war, such as supporting and embracing a religion that preaches a false Jesus, preaches a false gospel. You see, in a sense, the mark of the beast is a political, economic, religious, and military implementation of the rule of the modern Babylonian system with its human concepts that contradict the truth and the law of God. That has been around ever since the Roman Catholic Church became big. ever since the fourth revival of the Roman Empire came into existence. And of course, it will be enforced again in a much stronger way in the future. And that is something which I will talk about in a coming sermon. But for now, I'd like to close by saying the Bible is very clear insofar as what's going to happen. And only those who are totally oblivious to the truth will shake their head in unbelief and say, oh, well, you know, I don't believe that. That doesn't seem reasonable to me. Doesn't matter whether it sounds reasonable to you. The question is it something God says? And if he says it, it's going to happen.